With the new fiscal year underway and no state budget agreement in place, Governor Andrew Cuomo has called for a two-month budget extension of last year's budget until the end of May. This is the first late budget since 2010 and the first for Andrew Cuomo. Assemblyman Pete Lopez, a Republican from the 102nd Assembly District, says times have changed and Governor Cuomo's power has diminished a bit.
When Andrew Cuomo came in, a very strong governor during a time of crisis with the recession, he took the lead and the legislature basically followed. And so we've reached a point where both houses are stretching their wings, so to speak, working with this governor, and are beginning to stake out their own territory. The financial climb is a little better than when we were in the midst of the recession, certainly. And I believe it's just relative independence of the legislature. We've heard some suggest that it was time for the legislature to be treated as a co-equal, and I believe that's part of the process here.
Some of the disagreements this year are not necessarily financial or budgetary in nature. They're more issues, criminal justice issues, raising the age, upstate Uber and Lyft. Very often when there was a late budget, it was taxes and spending. Not so this year.
Well, we've seen policy issues work their way into the budget process, and most of us argue that they should be separate because of what we're seeing now. Ultimately, when you take issues that have sharp divide in terms of belief and philosophy, they take more time to address. So to push those into a budget process just basically is a recipe for a pressure cooker mentality, and that leads to these issues derailing the budget process. Now, bear in mind that when people think about budgets, they often think about numbers, but it's far from that. Budgets themselves are policy priorities just with dollar signs attached. So there is a policy component to the budget. But when you take extraneous measures, raise the age really is not a budget measure, is a profound policy issue, put that in the mix, and that just leads to, as we're seeing, a reason for negotiations to break down.
What are some of the negatives, some of the drawbacks of the extender?
Well, ultimately, the extender itself will keep people at a flat rate. If individuals are expecting increases, it does make it difficult for folks to project. I would say the folks who will likely have the most difficulty in the near term will be schools. So foundation aid, school aid formulas, without that moving forward, school budgets are being formulated now, and voters will begin to decide on school budgets within probably the next 4 to 6 weeks. So traditionally, schools will be the first to cry foul and say, geez, people, let's carve out portions that are more time sensitive and at least nail those down. Now, we do know there is still debate on school funding. I do favor increased foundation aid. You know, the governor came in with his proposal, and it was markedly different than both the Senate and the Assembly. So arriving at that happy conclusion itself is a policy decision, but the first to cry foul, in my opinion, will be schools who need it to go to the public to put their budgets up for a vote.
From what you're hearing, what are the major sticking points at this point?
Well, I think you touched on some of them. Raise the age, of course, is the major issue. Uber, Lyft, and school aid. I'd say those would be the three primary issues. The big challenge, though, and this is something I just want to share with you, and thank you for bringing me on your show today, is that I've been in this arena since 1983. I'd worked for three senators and an assemblyman. I'm now in my sixth term. And I have to say that in all my years, this is the most secretive and closed budget process I've ever witnessed. So we have the governor and legislative leaders all speaking about transparency, really overused phrases, transparency, open government, public process. Instead, we've seen the exact opposite. So we've been briefed, my conference has been briefed on a few bills, and I find what I'm seeing from these draft bills, backdoor borrowing, use of authorities to evade raising funds for through the budget process. It would appear that there are millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars of legislative ads, which go back to the old days of member items. And for our listeners, member items are not dead. They still are alive. So my frustration is outside of the content. We have a budget process that excludes the Democratic conference in the Senate, excludes the Republican conference in the minority, puts us back to use of messages of necessity urgency measures to pass a budget that should be open. And here we were last week at midnight waiting for a bill to print, the first bill to be voted on, and that bill was suddenly yanked, and simply because the process is so opaque and convoluted.
That 3 minute in the room, which you're criticizing, has really is nothing new. Why is it so secretive this year? What has made it even more so?
It's more, and ultimately, you've seen, and I think in the press and media, you've witnessed processes where we've had open government, open conference committees where debate and discussion would occur. We've seen reports. We've seen even glimpses of leaders furtively running in and out of secretive meetings. You're not even seeing that. So you don't even see a person running in and out of a room or leaders being accosted as they're on their way out of a conference with the governor. So you have 3 men in a room is now four people in a room. So add the Independent Democratic Coalition, because they certainly have a voice. And really, with the Senate, they're the neck, in my opinion, that turns the head based on their positioning. So ultimately, what I see, and this is the hardest part, I think, for our listeners to grapple with. We talk about democracy. We talk about a free and open system, and we're having that discussion at state level, federal level. Yet we have a process here that is more like the feudal era, the kings and queens, the nobles swearing fealty to their lords. And in this case, a very secretive process that is the most secretive I've ever seen since I've been working with the legislature since 1983.
Now that Preparara is no longer the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, will that take the pressure off lawmakers and the governor to enact more ethics reforms?
That's a good question. I guess it depends on whether Preet's colleagues continue moving forward with the good work that Preparara had initiated. So in my mind, this is not a partisan issue. This is not Democrat, Republican, conservative, independent. This is a function of, are people doing their job that they were duly elected to do honestly and in good faith? So my hope would be, to answer your question, short answer, no. And my hope would be that Preparara's colleagues continue carrying this mantle forward simply because it's so important to our public and the security of our system.
Assemblyman Pete Lopez is a Republican who represents the 102nd Assembly District of New York.